भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Text Number 35. Sinchanganastvadharam amritapurakena ganastvadharama sinchanganastvadharam amritapurakena Asavaloka Kalagita Chahrichchayagnim Asavaloka Kalagita Chahrichchayagnim
Asavaloka Kalagita Chahrichchayagnim
No Ched Vayam Virahajag No ched vayam virahajagni upayukta deha.
No ched vayam virahajagni
upayukta deha. Na ched vayam virahajagni upayukta deha. That's a hard one, that one. Virahajagyupayuktadeha. Jnanena yama padayo padavim sakete. Jnane anga. Our dear Krishna. Naha. Our. Twat. Your. Adhara. Of the lips, Amrita, of the nectar, Purakena, with the flood, Hasa, smiling, Avaloka, by your glances, Kala, melodious, Gita, and a song of your flute, Ja, generated. Pritchaya, situated within our hearts, Agnim, the fire, Na Uchet, if not, Vayam, we, Viraha, from separation, Ja, born. Agni, within the fire, Upayukta, placing, Deha, our bodies, Janena, it's okay, it's not the battery, Yama, we shall go, Padayo, of the feet, Padavim, to the place, Sake, O friend, Te, your. Dear Krishna, please pour the nectar of your lips upon the fire within our hearts, a fire you ignited with your smiling glances and the sweet song of your flute. If you do not, we will consign our bodies to the fire of separation from you, O friend, and thus, like yogis, attain to the abode of your lotus feet by meditation. Text 36. Yahi yambu jakshatavapada talam ramaya tattakshanam kachidaranya jana priyasya asprakshmatad prabritinanya samakshamanjaha statum stvayabi ramita bataparayama. O lotus-eyed one, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable even to stand in the presence of another man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you. Krishna is telling them to go home to their husbands. So they're saying, we will not be satisfied by our husbands. So that's the other man that's being talked about here. Sriyat padambu jaurajas chakame tulasya. Ladva pivakshasi padam kila bhitya jushtam yasya svavikshana utanya sura prayasas tadvadvayam chatava pada raja prapannaha. Goddess Lakshmi, whose glance is sought after by the demigods with great endeavour, has achieved the unique position of always remaining on the chest of her lord, Narayana. Still, she desires the dust of his lotus feet, even though she has to share that dust with Tulsi Devi, and indeed with the lord's many other servants. Similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet for shelter. Purport. The gopis here point out that the dust of the Lord's feet is so ecstatic and enlivening that the goddess of fortune wants to abandon her unique position on his chest to share with many other devotees a position at his feet. Thus the gopis urge Lord Krishna not to be guilty of a double standard. Since the Lord gave the goddess of fortune a place on his chest and also allowed her to seek the dust of his lotus feet, Krishna should certainly give the same opportunity to his most loving devotees, the gopis. After all, the gopis plead, seeking the dust of your lotus feet is perfectly justified, and you should encourage us in this endeavour and not try to send us away. Om Agyanati Midandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svabhadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankhayate Gudim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. The gopis have been rejected by Krishna, ostensibly. so they're protesting. They're saying, you have ignited the fire of desire within our hearts. Hassa avaloka kalagita jagrit saya agnim. Hassa avaloka kalagita jagrit saya agnim. There's a fire burning within our hearts. You know, this is what they call love. And this is what is called love. When the beloved is, all they can do is think of their, of the object of love. So in this case, that's the gopis. All they can do is think of Krishna. They can't think of anything else. And, you know, the nature of love is that one wants to be with the beloved. Even when one's not with him or her, then one thinks of them constantly. And those thoughts of Krishna have been agitated, if you like, or inspired. That flame of love has been ignited by Krishna's charming behaviour. Here, hasa. Hasava loka kalagita jahrich chayagnim. Hrit means in the heart. Ja has been born. Agnim, the fire of love, has taken birth within our hearts because of your smiling at us, your glances at us, your playing of the flute, specifically in this situation. So they are deeply absorbed in this mood of love, and they're attracted to Krishna. They want to kiss him. Basically, that's what they're saying. Please kiss us. That's really what they're saying. Like a girl wants to embrace her boyfriend, or the boyfriend wants to embrace the girl. So they're saying, Sinchanganas Twadada Ramrita Purakena, please pour the nectar of your lips on the fire of our heart to extinguish that desire, and that desire to be embraced and to be shown affection by Krishna. The gopis are saying, please extinguish that fire within our hearts. And if you don't, then we will simply become absorbed. Interesting, a nice example is the example of a yogi. Yogi will become absorbed like a yogi. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes this comment. Will become absorbed like a yogi in this fire of separation from you. Because that fire of attraction or love for Krishna is so powerful and all-consuming that the gopis are feeling we'll die if we can't have that association with you. This is love. The love of the gopis is so deep and profound, so absorbed in Krishna that they're feeling such separation from Krishna, even as Gangeshwara Prabhu mentioned the other day. They're in Krishna, they have Krishna's association, but they're still feeling separation from him. Their love is so strong. All they can do is meditate upon Krishna, actually. That's all they do, is meditate on Krishna all the time. And now that Krishna is calling them into the forest, those desires, that love and affection for Krishna has become completely aroused and inflamed, if you like. That's what's described here. Agnim. But Krishna has, in teasing them, he said, no, sorry, you have to go home to your husbands. Go home to your family. You know, this is the wrong place to be in the middle of the night. And so they're saying, if you reject us, then we will simply die like a yogi. And in that way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, in that way, our bodies will become like ashes, like dust. Because in the next verse they say, we want to take shelter of the dust of your lotus feet. If that's the case, if we can't have your association, then let us just be like the dust of Vrindavan. Let our bodies be burnt up and consumed in ashes, so that at least we can have the dust of your lotus feet. Or we can be associated with the dust of your lotus feet, with all the other devotees. That's the desire, strong desire of the devotees. Interesting. I was thinking about this example last night, and then it occurred to me this morning that there is an example of this. The yogis, by meditation, can, by concentration on the super soul, the Paramatma, the example is of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was actually quite a bit of a rascal in many respects, because he was so attached to having the kingdom, being the king. We were discussing this in the class the other day. And despite the fact that his brother, Vidura, who was a great devotee, gave him good advice and good, instructed him wisely, gave him good counsel, but he ignored it. He was attached, like anything, to seeing his sons as the kings, the rulers. And that's what he was absorbed in. And Prabhupada mentions that, this is the danger of material existence. We can become absorbed in external things: house, family, home, relatives, kingdom, money, position, power, influence. These things are all external. But Dhritarashtra couldn't be persuaded by Vidura, despite he gave him good counsel. In fact, Duryodhana did not like Vidura instructing his father, and so he insulted him, and eventually Vidura left. But then, after the battle of Kurukshetra, when the results of his attachment became obvious, the fire of that attachment had been burnt well and truly, everybody was singed, if you like. It's interesting. There's the fire of the love of the gopis for Krishna, which purifies, and there's the fire of karma, if you like, lust. Was it lust, greed, anger? Illusion, moha. What else is there? Madness. Yes, the madness of material. So Dhritarashtra was absorbed in these things, and then the end result was destruction for everybody. Destruction for everybody. So at the end, Vidura came back, and his prophecies were fulfilled. The results of Dhritarashtra's material attachment meant great suffering. And for Dhritarashtra, total embarrassment, humiliation, denigration. He was forced to live in the house of Yudhisthira. I think Pidura says, like a dog. You're just begging like a dog. So anyway, he was able to then eventually, finally he got through to Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra decided to leave home. And Maharaj Yudhisthira was concerned about the welfare of his uncle. To see how tolerant and saintly Maharaj Yudhisthira was, that despite all of the trouble that Dhritarashtra had caused him and his family, that after the battle, when everybody had been wiped out, he still looked after his uncle. Quite amazing when you think about it. So he was concerned. But Narada Muni came at that point in time and he told him. He explained to him, Dhritarashtra has gone to the forest and he has taken the instructions of Vidura seriously. So now he is engaged in the yoga process, yoga practice. And because Dhritarashtra was such a materially attached person and attached to the externals, therefore it was appropriate for him to engage in a yoga practice, which is basically meant for those in a bodily concept of life. For by controlling the actions of the body, or controlling the mind and the senses first by the sitting posture, fasting, bathing, keeping oneself pure, and by following the drilling the breathing, one then learns how to concentrate, or practices on concentrating the mind. So in this way, Dhritarashtra was able to, by performing the Ashtanga yoga process, he was able to separate himself from all of the gross and subtle material elements, and was able to then concentrate his consciousness within, on the Paramatma. And by merging the sense of the spiritual identity of oneself with the spiritual identity of the Lord, he was actually able to free himself completely from the influence of the material energy. Because that's the same, that's achieved by the devotees who are engaged in devotional service. By engaging in devotional service, one is able to free oneself from the attachments to family, house, all of these different things, the external things. So the same thing is achieved by the devotees when they engage in devotional service. When one worships Krishna in the temple, then that engagement is as good as the liberation that's achieved by the yogis. Better, actually. Because the natural propensity to act is satisfied. Anyway, Dhritarashtra was by the dint of his yoga practice able to merge, if you like, we don't merge, but he was able to merge the gross and subtle material senses into their source. And as a result of that, he was able to leave his body at will, and in the process of merging all of the elements one into the other, his body actually self-immolated. Huh? That's a powerful yogi who can just leave his body at will, and all he leaves behind is his... because Maharaj Yudhisthira was concerned, who will perform the funeral rites for my uncle? It's important. And Narada Muni would say, you don't have to worry about the funeral rites because he'll self immolate. Huh? Amazing. That's how powerful a yogi he was. Powerful a personality he was. He was able. Not only that, actually he's very interesting. He's something interesting. The chastity of his wife, Gandhari, is it? She in seeing her husband depart in that fashion, like a great yogi, she also entered into the fire, because she was already feeling separation and the grief of losing her 100 sons. Right? So she was already feeling great grief. And then when her husband also departed, then the separation from her family and from her husband was so great that that was more painful than entering into the fire. So as a chaste lady, she followed her husband. As Prabhupada points out, you know, this can't be imitated. And he said in later years, you know, the women would forced into, practically thrown onto the pyre of their husband. So that the practice was outlawed because, you know, it wasn't not being sati. So the gopis are saying, if you won't be kind to us, Krishna's saying, go back to your husbands, you know, we can't be satisfied by just any ordinary person like our husbands or any other man. We can only be satisfied by you. And if we can't gain that association, then we'll just die in the fire of separation. And in that way, then we'll just become like ashes, like dust. Like Dhritarashtra just became ashes. And thus, like yogis attain to the abode of your lotus feet by meditation, we'll also attain your. And so then and what will be wrong with that? Because even Lakshmi, right, whom everybody wants to seek favour of, right, Lakshmi, everybody's praying to Lakshmi, please be kind to us. Yeah? Please favour us with your smile. Even the demigods, it's mentioned here, the demigods praying to Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the eternal consort, good fortune. Lakshmi is the embodiment of good fortune, prosperity. Material and spiritual. Although more important is spiritual prosperity, but of course the, you know, materialistic person is praying to Lakshmi for material prosperity. But it's interesting that it's pointed out here. Lakshmi, who's situated on your chest, even she wants to take the dust of your lotus feet. She wants to be associated with the dust of your lotus feet along with all of the other devotees. So what is wrong with it? If we can't have your association, then let us, like the other devotees, and even like Lakshmi, let us let us be at the dust of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest. And, you know, it's described in previous chapters how the animals and the plants, they're all, even Krishna's friends, they want to massage Krishna's feet. The nectar, the pleasure, if you like, of engaging in Krishna's service in one way or another, in somehow or another, being surrendered to Krishna and taking shelter of his lotus feet, that is ultimately the goal of the gopis. That the pleasure, they're looking for that pleasure. Let us be associated with your devotees who are simply gathered at your lotus feet and who are prepared to do anything that you recommend. And we'll be happy by that. And they say, how could any other person satisfy us, our husbands? It's not possible. We can only be satisfied if we can get that opportunity. So, don't reject us. This is their plea, basically. It's not fair that you reject us. Because even the goddess of fortune wants to take shelter at your lotus feet. The residents of Vrindavan want to take shelter at your lotus feet. All of the devotees want to take shelter at your lotus feet. For in that shelter, they feel completely satisfied. And they're saying this is justified. As a result, our desire to stay with you as the dust of your lotus feet is authorized. Not that we should go home. Huh? This is the desire of all of the devotees, especially Lakshmi. So if you allow Lakshmi to do this, then you should allow us to do this also. The dust of the Lord's feet is so ecstatic and enlivening that the goddess of fortune wants to abandon her unique position on his chest to share with many other devotees a position at his feet. So what does it mean to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna? Practically. Surrender to a spiritual master. And follow his instructions, basically. The spiritual master is the external manifestation of Krishna. So rendering service is to take shelter of it. Of course, we see that in the mood of the gopis. Of course, they understand Krishna's desire is, he's just teasing them. So they're saying, it's not fair. You shouldn't tell us to go home. It's not fair. That's not what you're playing your flute for. You're playing your flute to attract us. And so to tell us to go home is not proper. So don't be a hypocrite. On the one hand, you're playing your flute, saying, come on, come on. Right? And then on the other hand, you're saying, what are you doing here? Go home. This is not good for you to be out at night. So they're saying, don't be a hypocrite. You're just being a hypocrite. We know the inner meaning of your smiling and glancing at us and the playing of your flute. So we know what your innermost desire is. We know actually what you want. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Yudhisthira.
Sorry? Oh, Dhritarashtra's leaving his body?
Yeah.
What was the question?
There's a phenomenon called spontaneous human combustion.
Yes. By accident? They merged. I don't know. I'm not. Don't know enough about it. But it is. There are stories of people, you know, going up in smoke in front of their television sets. In their lounge room. Spontaneous combustion. It just goes to show that it can be done. But perhaps that was a bit of a surprise for them. But it just goes to show that it can be done. So the descriptions in the Bhagavatam are not fanciful. There are some interesting exchanges written by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur in this section of the Bhagavatam, which illustrate the intimacy with which the gopis are relating to Krishna. They're feeling so strongly the affection and love for Krishna, they can't think of anybody else. The affection for Krishna is so strong, it's not possible. And they feel, if we can't be with you, then we'll die. That's their love, that's how strong their love is. If I can't be with you, then I'm just going to fall on the ground and cry. You see, and you see that in the mundane love songs. You know, if I can't be with you, then our love is forever. So this kind of mood, this is where it's coming from. If I can't be with you, then I'm going to die. It's a deep, deep attraction and affection for the lover.
And how do you explain to the neophytes that by gaining the dust of lotus feet, you get liberation?
Liberation, by gaining the dust of the lotus feet. Well, shelter at Krishna's feet means following his instructions, basically. If you follow Krishna's instructions, being engaged in devotional service, your activities will not be of the material world. They may be apparently in the material world, but they will not be of the material world. Those activities connected to Krishna will be spiritual, right? Because a devotee is engaged in spiritual activities, even though he's apparently in the material world, actually the activities are of the spiritual realm, and so therefore considered to be liberated. So taking the dust, or taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, means basically following his instructions, following the order of the spiritual master, as Rasvalasini said. So, yeah. It's a subtle point, actually, that people may, you know, because it struck me the other day, people are attached to externals. Dhritarashtra was attached to the external. And so, you know, and this particular point is esoteric. Esoteric means, anybody know what esoteric means?
Secret.
Secret, yes. Hidden. Because we tell people, take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. But what does that actually mean? What does it mean? To take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet means to follow his instructions. It's like Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namashkuru. Right? Is it not that? One should offer one's obeisances to Krishna. Right? So, here's a thought, just a thought. When one offers one's obeisances, then what's one doing? What do you do?
Surrendering.
Huh? You're surrendering, yes, that's the mood. But what do you do physically? What do you do physically when you offer your obeisances?
Bow down.
Bow down, yes. And in bowing down, what is that? Where are you going?
You lose your pride.
Huh?
You lose your pride.
You lose your pride, yes. Yeah, that's good. But what are you doing physically? Huh? Yes, going to the feet. You're bowing down on the ground. You're rolling in the dust. Huh? So, you know, when we offer our obeisances to our spiritual master, when we're offering our obeisances to Krishna, what are we saying? Ouch, my back hurts. Maybe that's what we are saying, but that's not what we should be saying. By physically bowing down before Krishna, what are we saying? Yes, I'm yours. Do we think like that? Well, at least while we're bowing down, we do anyway. When we get up again, that's another thing. At least, you know, one of the devotees said to Prabhupada in the early days, you know, I don't feel like doing it. Prabhupada said, just do it anyway. And then the mood will come. So that's the mood. Bow down, Krishna. Bow down before Krishna. And that was that Boy George song, right? Bow down, Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. Bow down, Mister. Everybody ultimately has to bow down. At the time of death, we bow down. If we won't do it beforehand, we'll be forced to do it. So rather than be forced, better to do it voluntarily. Huh? So, you know, Mam Namaskuru, Krishna says, offer your obeisances to me. There's different types of obeisances that one can offer. So, taking shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna means bowing down and submitting oneself, right? I would suggest. And then in that mood of submission, one's accepting Krishna as the master. Right? That's what the gopis are saying. We're accepting you as our master. More than just master. Right? Even if you reject us. Aslishya, what is it? Aslishya, that verse, the last verse of the Sikshastika. Even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me, he's completely free to do anything and everything. For he's always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. Aslis yava padam panastavam adarshanam mama adarshanam. Even if I can't see him. Which is what they're saying here. If you won't accept us, then we'll just die out of separation for you and like yogis we'll merge into the dust of Vrindavan and then by that merging we'll be able to get your association. Just as the other devotees want your association by offering their obeisances to you. Just like Mother Lakshmi. So, now, Are we going to be able to convince people that by surrendering to Krishna they'll become liberated? Maybe not. You know, some people, you know, they'll say, oh, you guys are just like us. What's the difference? But you can, maybe that's, if they're a little bit biased, they can understand that point. Because here's the thing, you see, people think, if I bow down to Krishna, then I'll just become his, I'll become subservient to him, so where is the question of liberation? But of course, we know that by pursuing, following Krishna's instructions, taking shelter of Krishna, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, was it jamma kama cha me divam evam yo viti tattvataha punam? Naiti mameti sojana. We won't come back again to the material world. That's liberation. Right? But sometimes people will see that service to Krishna is another form of constraint, if you like. But actually, it's a means of liberation. Because at the end of this body, one doesn't have to take birth again. Chaktva deham puna janma. Na. Puna janma, no. Again, birth, na. No. It's basically what Krishna says. Puna janma, na. Again, born, no. Interesting syntax, we know. English is not like that.
The gopis have already lost their heart.
Yes. Yes, they had already. All they could do was think of Krishna. They are totally absorbed in Krishna. It's like when a young boy becomes totally infatuated with a young girl and all he can do is think of her all the time. Very funny. Oh my love. Very, that's a serious business. I think that's, you know, that's, it's at that kind of, at that age, where the gopis are just young girls and Krishna is a young boy, very attractive, and so natural that they just become infatuated by him. Although, you know, it's what's called puppy love. Because, you know, love at a young age is not considered very serious. But for the person who's experiencing it, it's everything. Totally absorbed. Huh? If I can't be with you, then I might as well die. That's how they feel. That's how they're feeling. And, you know, that's the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. That's how they feel. That's the depth of things. You know, it's described how the cowherd boys, when they're playing in the forest and they just pass, a tree passes between themselves and Krishna, they feel the shock of separation from Krishna because they can't see him. The gopis curse Lord Brahma. What is this? What are these eyes you've created with eyelids, you know, that we blink? And in our blinking, then we can't see, you know, for the fraction of a second that it takes to blink, they can't see Krishna, they curse Lord Brahma. What is this creation of yours? It's so faulty that we can't see Krishna all of the time. We have to blink our eyes. So that deep, deep, deep affection and attraction for Krishna, almost unfathomable. All right. Anything else? Okay. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam.